secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. But you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me is Alan Light, a frequent contributor to the New York Times and Rolling Stone. He's been editor-in-chief at Vibe and Spin magazines and has a new book out called The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. And he's on the phone to talk about this book. Let's begin with Hallelujah. This is a song that has been covered. I don't know that I knew Leonard Cohen wrote it to begin with, but I know I've heard, well, let's just say more than one version of this too.
I think the last I checked, the official count for number of recordings of the song was up over 360, 370 or so. So wow. One way or another, I'm sure it's reached you.
Well, what inspired you to write this book about a single song?
Well, you know, it sort of occurred to me that this song had a trajectory that was really unlike any other song that I could think of, even before sort of getting into the ins and outs of its history. It was clear that this is a song that became a global anthem, that became really a modern standard song, but that it happened over an extended period of time. And when you think about the other songs that are up at that sort of altitude, you think about Bridge Over Troubled Water, or you think about Imagine. And these are songs whose meanings have maybe changed over time, but when they came out, everybody noticed them. They were big hits, and then a lot of people started recording them, and they became these very popular songs. Hallelujah was, first of all, when Leonard first wrote this song in 1984 and recorded it, his record company rejected the album that it was on and wouldn't put it out. It then was released on a little independent label a few months later and got absolutely no notice and no attention. You know, the review in Rolling Stone, which was a very nice review of the various positions album, didn't mention Hallelujah. So the song started completely invisible, you know, not just under the radar, but like nowhere near the radar.
True.
And it took 10, 15, almost 20 years for this chain of events to happen where it started to show up in soundtracks and on TV shows and then on the American Idol and the different singing competitions and then more and more covers. And finally, you know, when I sort of started to think about doing this book maybe in 2010 or so, you know, Katie Lang sang it at the opening of the Winter Olympics ceremonies, and Justin Timberlake sang it at the Haiti telethon following the earthquake, and, you know, now this song is just everywhere all the time, but it took a road getting there that was not comparable to anything else I could come up with, worth taking a look at.
I know that not only was it on a record that was the only Leonard Cohen record that his record company didn't release, but it was also kind of a last choice to put on that album to begin with.
Well, it was a big struggle for him to get it done. He said that this was a song that really tormented him and that he worked on for years and years and years, you know, in different tellings for 3 or 4 years, and that he wrote 70, 75, 80 verses, couldn't figure out quite what the song was that he wanted to write, but settled on a version, recorded that, and then as soon as the record came out, you know, immediately started changing it when he was performing and going back and rearranging the song and using different verses. And I think what that set in place was something that's really important to the history of this song, which is that the lyrics are sort of malleable. You're allowed to change them up. You're allowed to drop different verses or use different lines. And because it's such an ambiguous mysterious sort of a song. It's, you know, Leonard giving permission for you to alter the words like that has opened up a lot of possibilities, because if you respond to the song as an actual religious or more spiritual song, you can kind of emphasize that side of what's in there. If you respond to it as a more romantic, more sort of sensual song about heartbreak, you can turn that part of it up and turn the other part down. And it's enabled this song to get into a lot of different contexts and take on, if not different meanings, at least different emphases that I think, you know, let it go to places that other songs aren't necessarily able to go.
And the version that we are most familiar with today, even with the words being changed around slightly, was actually one that, if you could call it, the John Cale edit. John Cale who kind of put together the Leonard Cohen had provided him with those 75 or 80 verses, and he didn't pick the ones that Leonard had in the original, but picked the ones he thought fit best.
Right. I mean, the version that really sort of, you know, started to transform the song standing was the recording by Jeff Buckley. But Jeff Buckley didn't actually learn the song from Leonard Cohen's version. He learned it, as you mentioned, from John Cale's version. John Cale had been in his Velvet Underground, recorded Hallelujah for a Leonard tribute record that a French magazine put together around 1990, 1991. And he heard Leonard sing the song, but he didn't know the song. And this shows you how obscure this song was. John Cale was a big Leonard fan. He knew Leonard. And this was 6 years after the album came out, and he'd never heard the song before. So when he heard Leonard perform it, he said, I could maybe do that song. Called Leonard's office and said, I'd like to take a shot. I want to get the words right. Can you send me the lyrics to the song? And he said he went out and he came back, and there were 15 pages of lyrics in his fax machine, where Leonard, I guess, just kind of said, here's all of it. You figure it out. See what you can do with it. And he rearranged the verses and came up with a different edit of the song. And it was that version that Jeff Buckley was first exposed to and then started to perform and ultimately recorded on the one album that he finished in his lifetime.
Well, Leonard Cohen is still alive and going strong, but Jeff Buckley's life was cut short, much like his father, singer-songwriter Tim Buckley's was. Tim Buckley died of a drug overdose in 1975 at the age of 28. And Jeff Buckley had a voice that people were just attracted to, and Hallelujah really became kind of his signature song and in his signature style.
Well, I think Jeff became such a huge influence on so many artists who followed him, and is, you know, constantly people like Radiohead and Coldplay and, you know, all of these sort of younger rock bands talk about Jeff Buckley. And I think people now might assume that Jeff was a much bigger star when he was alive than he actually was. You know, there was a lot of hype and a lot of media attention around Jeff Buckley. But when his album Grace came out in 1994, it actually didn't sell very well. It didn't really resonate much with the public. But a couple of years later, Jeff died in a very sort of romantic, tragic way. He drowned in the Mississippi River, where he went for a swim when he was working on his second album down in Memphis. And that story, I think, made a lot of people go back and look into, okay, what was this guy about? Why were people so excited? Why were, you know, did Paul McCartney and Jimmy Page and all these other people, you know, take to him so much? And Hallelujah became almost as if he'd written his own epitaph. It was this incredibly intimate, deeply personal and moving rendition of the song. And when people went back to listen to that record, it really became after the fact his signature song and the performance that he's best known for. And it was after that, after his death, after people had gone back to explore his music, that the song started to get a little more attention, started to get added to soundtracks and surface in the world in different ways.
Well, there are hundreds of versions of Hallelujah floating around in audio and video land, as you say in your acknowledgments at the end of the book. And you do apologize to readers that, you know, if you didn't mention their particular favorite version in the book, well, you hope they find new meaning all the same. What is your favorite version of Hallelujah?
This is always the question, right? And it shifts a lot. It's a little bit of a punt of an answer, but my answer really is, I think, the way that Leonard Cohen performs the song now and has performed it the last couple of years. He's had this, you know, largely sparked by the discovery of this song, there's been this incredible resurgence, not even resurgence of interest in Leonard Cohen. He's actually more popular now. He's 78 years old now and is a bigger star than he ever was before in his life. And he's touring the world and selling out arenas and stadiums. And it's this incredible victory lap for a career that never fully got acknowledged, you know, earlier on. And I think the way that he sings the song now, with the lessons learned from, you know, not just his own performances, but all of the different ways people have done it, the way that the arrangement of what the lyrics are now, the things that he's retained from his original version, but also altered over time. I think there's a power that hearing him do it the last few years, I don't think there's anything else that quite touches that. You know, I think Katie Lang does a fantastic version. I think her voice is really a remarkable instrument for this song. And there's I think it's easy to get, when you're talking about a writer like Leonard Cohen, it's so easy to just talk about the words and get very hung up in the lyrics and kind of the jigsaw puzzle of the lyrics. But people respond to a song first as a melody. They respond to a hook and a chorus and a feeling of a song. And there's an instrumental version of Hallelujah by a ukulele player, virtually like the Jimi Hendrix of the ukulele, a guy named Jake Shimabukuro.
Oh, yes.
That's a really beautiful, simple, you know, just getting to the essence of the melody of this song. And when I talked to him about it, he said, you know, this song isn't about the words at all to me. It's about the way these notes go together and these chords fit together. And it was always a good exercise for me after spending some time, okay, who sang which version and which verse and how did they change it? And, you know, to sort of go back and listen to his take on the song and just hear the feel of it, the feel of the notes and the melody, and remember, you know, that's where it has to start, or people don't, you know, they don't really care or react at all. So that was at least an important version for me.
Alan Light, the author of The Holy or the Broken, Leonard Cohen, Jeff Buckley, and the Unlikely Ascent of Hallelujah. A few of our favorite versions of Hallelujah are on our website, wvxu.org, as well as a link to Alan's book and more about Alan at wvxu.org. Thanks again, Alan. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
This is Cincinnati Edition.